Good morning. We are holding in Tanya, chapter 9, Perektes. And we are holding at page 40. We need some Tanyas on this side. Some Tanyas over on that side. There you have some more. So we are holding on page 40, page 28. Is it 40 or 28? Well, everything has to be confusing. So it's both. It's 40 and 28. On the bottom, in this red Tanya, it's 40. And on the top, it's page 28. Okay. The end of chapter 9. So over here in this chapter, we're learning about the battle of life. The battle between the good and bad in the human being. The battle of the two souls. As we learned earlier, the human being is comprised, especially the Jewish person, is comprised of two different neshamas, two souls. One soul, a transcendental godly soul, which all of its aspirations, all of its powers, its entire persona, every element of its being is dedicated and devoted only to serving Hashem. It has no other beingness, no other existence but its attachment to Hashem. The other soul, the animal soul, is an earthly being that comes from the unholy realm, a realm that claims there is an existence other than God, and it wants to have a good time. That's it. It seeks to satiate itself. That's it. And we can see this in ourselves. One day we wake up and we're all idealistic and all ambitious and we want to do what's right. And other times we experience a whole different self, a self that is very selfish, very into its own existence, egocentric. It just wants pleasure, fun, anything that is going to make it happy. These are the two souls. We learned that these two souls have one body to express themselves. Even though there are two souls coming from two different planets, coming from completely two different worlds, for the duration of time that Hashem has granted the human being life, these two souls are integrated one with each other, and they both inhabit one body. However, the body can only facilitate one soul at a time. And that is what is going to cause a major fight and a major war between these two souls. As we learned last week, each of these souls desire to be the full ruler over the body. That the body should be an instrument or a garment for the soul. And that the body's identity should be a vehicle for the soul to express itself. Which soul? Well, each soul wants the body to be the vehicle of what it wants, it desires. So the godly soul wants to be, that life should be one continuous expression of serving God. And that should be the very identity, the very eye of the human being. That's who it should be. What am I all about? I am all about knowing Hashem in my mind, loving God in my heart. My emotions are all just to serve Hashem, and all the thought, speech, and action, which are considered behavior, should also be only holy thoughts, only holy speech, and only holy activity. Only holy thought, holy speech, holy activity, that's it. Nothing else should be going on in the human being but the neshama. That's it. And the animal soul wants vice versa. It wants life should be one long exercise of materialistic pursuit, the pursuit of what it is all about. It is all about the physical enjoyment and pleasure of life. Okay? So now we were holding in the midst of discussing how the godly soul, what it desires. Okay? So again, this is in brief. This is a generalization that we just said. How each soul wants full obedience, full sovereignty, full control over the body. However, more in detail, the godly soul, he begins to explain, wants to fill the body from head to toe in with a very specific way. It wants that the mind should be filled with holy intelligence, the heart should be filled with holy emotion, the limbs should be filled with holy activity, the mouth should be filled with holy speech. Meaning everything in one's life should be devoted towards a higher cause, to serving one's creator. Okay, so we were learning, we were holding in the midst of the breakdown of how the godly soul wants to advance slowly, step by step, to completely conquer the body. He uses the analogy of two kings fighting over a city. That's really what the analogy of Shlomo HaMelech gives in Koheles, of a war of two kings over one city, each one wanting the inhabitants, and in this case the inhabitants are the limbs, to serve and to be submissive to it, and to express, and to be completely dedicated and devoted to their monarch, to their ruler, to their king. Okay, so that's where he's talking about stage by stage. I just want to emphasize one thing before we learn further. I made a little mistake last week when we were talking about the, before we learn inside further, we were talking about the primary residence of these two souls. Where do they reside in the body? So we learned that the godly soul's primary root, where it, this is its base, from where it operates, its primary base, from where it makes contact with the body, and from there it continues to expand into the rest of the body, is primarily in the brain. It also has a secondary residence, a second place, which is also the seat of the godly consciousness, and that is the right ventricle of the heart. Which, okay, that's what we mentioned about the godly soul. And we understand the difference. In the brain is where it presents its holy ideas, its consciousness of its vision of life, its objective sense of reality, that it knows that God is real, and its philosophy and its ideology, that's in the brain. However, the godly soul is more than just an idealistic being. It's not dry. It's a very passionate being. So the godly soul also has an emotional place within the human being. It sits within the heart. And in the heart, it can express its emotion. However, that's a secondary state, as we spoke earlier, because the primary force in the godly soul is first its intelligence. Everything begins with what's right. Then it also gets excited emotionally about it. The animal soul, we said, its primary root hold of the human being is in the heart, not in the brain. Its very essence of the animal soul is its emotions. It's very impulsive. That's why it sits in the left side of the heart. He says the left ventricle of the heart, that's its main root. And from there, it expands and involves the entire body in what it is all about. Now, he makes an interesting statement. He says that the godly soul sits in the right side of the heart where there is no blood. So many, many are bothered by this. What do you mean that the right side doesn't have any blood? Now, this is really based on the Zohar. The Zohar says like this, that there's two chambers in the heart. One of them is filled with ruach, with oxygen, and the other one is filled with blood. So now, scientifically, we know that both sides of the heart are filled with blood. However, if we dissect it a little, now last week I gave an explanation, but I said it the opposite. Now, the way I mentioned last week is that at first the blood that doesn't have any oxygen goes into the left side of the heart, then it goes into the lungs to get oxygen, then it goes into the right side of the heart. It's the exact opposite. What happens is like this. The blood is diffused, is pumped into the entire body, bringing oxygen to the body, bringing life to the body, to the limbs. Then the blood rushes back to the heart. When it goes back to the heart, it first enters the right side of the heart. That's the gathering of the blood. The blood gathers in the right side of the heart. And over there, it's blood that doesn't have any oxygen. Okay, because now it just came back from the body. It released its oxygen into the body, and now it's going back into the right side of the heart in order for it to be oxygenated again. What happens is the right side pumps the blood into the lungs. In order for what? For it to receive the breath of life, in order for it to get the oxygen. From the lung, it travels back to the heart, to the left side of the heart. In the left side of the heart, you have the oxygenated blood that now the left side pumps the blood into the body. Okay? Now we'll understand what he means. The right side doesn't have any blood. What he means is not that it physically doesn't possess blood. What he means is like this. The purpose of it coming into the right side of the heart is not to deliver the blood in the body. The purpose of it coming to the right side, in the right side of the heart, it gathers the blood in order for it to bring it to the place, to the station that is going to give the oxygen. It's in order to bring the Ruach Chaim, the spirit into the blood. The right side of the heart serves as a pump that will pump the blood into the lungs for it to get the oxygen. So the objective of the right side of the heart is not the blood. The objective of the right side of the heart is the oxygen, to get the oxygen into the blood. Now the left side of the heart is receiving the oxygenated blood, and its purpose is to send blood throughout the entire body. Yes, oxygenated blood, but blood into the body. That's what its being is all about. That is why the blood is related more to physical life. The oxygen is connected more to spirit. That's why the godly soul resides in the right side of the heart, because the right side of the heart is the place of oxygen, which is more spiritual. The left side of the heart is the place of blood. And for that reason, the left side of the heart is the physical space, which is the most suited for the animal soul, whose entire existence is blood existence, which means emotional, animalistic, earthy existence. And that's what the animal soul is about. Just want to clarify that before we learn further. Okay. Now, as we're going to continue, when he spoke about the godly soul's ambition and how the godly soul desires to take control over the entire body, he says like this: the godly soul first begins exercising its desire or itself in the mind, which means what the neshama wants. Now again, let's understand something. The neshama, the godly soul, is not going to necessarily have what it desires. It's super ambitious. Our godly consciousness wants full control over the body, but not necessarily that might not happen. By most of us, it won't happen. By most of us, life is going to be a continuous up and down and battle between these two souls. In this chapter, however, he's expressing the vision of the godly soul. The vision of the godly soul is really the vision of the perfect life of a tzaddik. The perfect tzaddik lives this life that he's discussing over here, as we're going to see in the next chapter. However, even though the tzaddik is the one who lives this life that he describes now, and not everybody manages to live that life, that high life. Nevertheless, our soul from every Jew is a tzaddik. So the vision of our soul, the desire, the aspiration of the soul by each and every one of us is to live that noble life of where all of our life, our entire existence, is an expression of our godly self. And the animal self has absolutely no expression whatsoever in the body. Not only no expression, but the animal soul is actually vanquished. The animal soul has been eradicated in a very deep place, that it doesn't even have any more passions and desires for earthy things. Okay? We're going to learn about that. We'll understand that a little better. So he says like this. He explains it stage by stage. The neshama first wants to fill the mind with holy intelligence. That means that the soul wants that all of our thinking and all of our chachma and our bina, all of our creativity of the mind, all of our understanding of the mind, should be dedicated and devoted only to one thing: to the study of godly subjects, like the study of Chassidus, to the study of Torah, because that's, again, the will and the wisdom of Hashem. That's the only activity, that's the only stuff, knowledge that should be going on in a person's mind. Okay? Then, but that's only the first stage. Then it wants that as a result of this information and knowledge that is going on in the mind, through the power of Das, and as we spoke yesterday in the class Shabbos afternoon, Das is the ability of deeply connecting to what we know till we feel it. What the neshama wants is to create emotions. That from the mind it should travel into the heart, that we should experience powerful emotions towards Hashem. And when he speaks about the emotions, he first begins with fear and awe, because that's the first emotion that emerges from our soul, is its awe of God. First, it's awed by the greatness of Hashem. And that awe also, first is an awe in the mind, and then it's a trembling in the heart, when it becomes more, when that reality kicks in of how close and how awesome God is, it creates first an awe in the mind, and then literally a trembling in the heart. For someone who really, really feels the greatness of Hashem, it can create a physical trembling, not a fear of punishment, but a fear of being in the presence of such an awesome being, and that Hashem is looking down on you and expecting so much of you in serving of Him, and how we're not coming through the way we ought to, and that's what causes the fear. Okay, then it will swing into love, and the love will be very powerful love. He explains love in such intense form. It's amazing. Usually this kind of love and passion we have towards earthy things, but he explains a love that's not just, oh, I would like to do a mitzvah and so forth. We're dealing with literally a burning passion in the heart, where the heart is on fire. He says, like flaming coals, with longing, burning desire, with a pining, with a craving of all the being, where you want one thing to cleave and to attach itself to Hashem. That kind of love is what the godly soul wants to produce in the heart. And he says three stages. First, it wants to fully fill the heart with love from the depths of the heart, that it should fill, as he says, ratzef ahava. Ratzef means laden with love, like the floor that is that's completely, comes from the word ratzef, comes from the word ritzpah, like a floor that occupies the entire room. The bottom of the heart should be laden with this love, but it's only the bottom. There's still space in the heart for other love, which means the animal soul's consciousness and its aspirations still can make it into the person's heart. The godly soul wants to expand and inflate the love for it to fill the entire heart, meaning the entire space of emotional consciousness should be filled only with love of Hashem without any other desires and wants entering into the heart. There shouldn't be any appetites for physical pleasures coming from food, coming from all other kinds of physical enjoyments. The heart should be completely imbued, filled with love of Hashem. That's called malei fill. But, which would mean that the animal soul doesn't have any entrance into the heart. But that's not enough. The godly soul wants to take it even a step further. Once it fills the heart with its love, it wants to fill the heart so much with love that the love will spill over from the right side of the heart and will move into the left side of the heart. What does that mean? That the left side of the heart, which is the place which is usually dedicated for animalistic cravings and desires, that the animal soul itself should start yearning and desiring a relationship with God. So here's already a whole new stage. Not only does the godly soul want to fill the entire human consciousness with love of Hashem, but it wants that love to be coming also from the animal soul. Meaning to say, let me just explain something. If your heart is already filled with love of Hashem and there's no space for any other love, so what is an extra now by saying you want to get your left side of your heart involved? What does that mean? It means something like this. We always find the love of our godly soul is a different type of love than the love of our animal soul. The love of our godly soul is a more abstract love. By its very nature, it's ruach love. The love of our animal soul is more concrete. It's more immediate. It needs it right now. It demands, because it's so tangible. What the godly soul wants is that the love to Hashem should be with that same sense of urgency, the same sense of, I need it now, like the animal soul loves. Why? Because it wants it to be not only a love of the ruach, it wants it to be a boiling of the blood, that the physical blood of the body, like David HaMelech says, Libi upsari yirananu al kilchai. My heart and my flesh should sing to God. That the love to Hashem should cause a physical excitement, a physical reaction in the body. That the body's very physical desires should be towards the love of Hashem, which is a very, very amazing element. That's what the neshama wants. It wants to actually break in to the body completely. That the body should relate to Hashem in the same way the soul relates to Hashem. It should become the body's thing, not just the soul's thing, that the body is sometimes involved in. This is what the body, the flesh, wants. It's like we understand, sometimes we're excited to go hear a class, to learn, to daven. Okay, it's one thing. But it's another kind of inspiration. When we go to a restaurant or we go to the pizza shop and we're hungry, and we're standing in line, and we smell pizza, and the line is taking a little too long, and we're getting like, whoa. So you have like this, whoa, give it to me already, kind of. That kind of desire should be the craving towards Hashem, towards a mitzvah. Like Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, who couldn't wait till the morning when he ran through the glass to grab his lulav and his eshrog. It was with that same passion that someone is running for a physical pleasure, he ran to a mitzvah. And he cut his hand, didn't even know that he cut it because of his intense physical excitement in doing the mitzvah. That's the idea that it wants to capture the left side of the heart. However, in order to do that, in order to get that the blood of the animal soul, the blood element of the human being, should be transformed and should become a passion towards spirituality and towards Hashem, for that, he says, the godly soul has to upgrade its love. The love itself has to attain a whole new level of love. It can't be, it's not just more love, quantitatively more love, it's a different kind of love. And that is what he explained, we learned this last week, that the love has to become a love of pleasure, not a love of yearning. So we said there's two types of love. There's a love of fire, and there's a love of pleasure. A love of water. What does that mean? So last week we just gave a brief description, and we'll try to elaborate a little better on that. Love of fire is a love when you're far from that which you desire, when you feel distance, when you feel removed. When you look at fire, you see fire is yearning. Fire is very, very unhappy. That's the feeling you get by looking at fire. It is dissatisfied. In a sense, fire is in pain because you see the fire leaping, leaping, leaping. It wants to go somewhere, it can't, because something is holding it down. So it's throwing itself upward, but it's being held. And the Rambam explains, because fire is the source of fire, is outside of the atmosphere, and it really wants to go back to its source, but something, Hashem has enabled us to capture some of that energy from outside of the atmosphere down here below. But the fire is outside of its element, so it's seeking to go back. And because it's so far, that's its yearning. It's yearning. So fire represents thirst, of being at a distance. In the human experience, it means when you're loving someone and you don't feel connected to that person, you feel a separation, you feel a gap, that's what creates the fire of that's what creates fiery passion. And there's another kind of a love. When you're very, very close to someone and you're just enjoying your closeness with them, there is no fire, there is no passion, there's just attachment. There is pleasure of being in their company. That element of love is called love of water. Sometimes the mashal is given like a child who's been taken away from his parents for many years or for a long time, and he longs so much to be close to his father. He's burning. He can't wait for the day that he will come home. And then, finally, the child comes home. So in the beginning, he's still fired up. But then, as he sits with his father and he studies and he learns and he's close and he's enjoying, there is no fire there. But it's not that there's less love. It's a different kind of a love. There is a oneness, a complete merging. Sometimes in Chassidus it says, it's the two types of love is the difference of love that we have towards a spouse and the love that we have towards siblings. The love towards our siblings or the love to our parents is a love of water. The love to a spouse is a love of fire. And each one is, it's a complete different world of love. Why? See, with a spouse, we're dealing with two entities, two people that are, in essence, separated. I mean, of course, there's the idea that we're one neshama. But as they come down into this world, there are two. They come from two different families. They come from two different backgrounds. There is no, what we might call, blood relationship. So there is an essential gap. There's another element over here. This is man. This is woman. That are psychologically, emotionally, physically, and every element, they're different. So the love is that we want to bridge the gap of that difference. And that's what creates the fire. The fire comes from the separation, from the distance, from the remove. That's what creates the burning. The burning is, I want to break that barrier that is separating me from you. That's the idea. That's that, the fire element of it. The love of siblings is a calm love. And it's supposed to be calm. Because the idea of we are one. We are always one. We're connected to each other out of essential connection. And it's a whole different kind of a love. The love of siblings, in a sense, is deeper because you can always, always fall back to that love. You know, chas v'shalom, a marriage can come to an end. A love, your relationship of your siblings is just who you are and what you are, your very essence, and they're always there for you. So there's that there is we'll learn about that later in Tanya, about these two loves and our godly soul also. We're going to get to that chapter 18. But that's the idea, that it is a calm. And in a sense, what is appropriate in one relationship is inappropriate in the other relationship. In a relationship of marriage, the very nature of the relationship is that it's supposed to be a love of fire. And that is why a marriage cannot thrive and get stale and dies, God forbid, or could die, God forbid, if that fire element is taken away. And that is why there is so much laws in Torah that keeps husband and wife separated from time to time, bringing them together and separating, together and separated, because that's the only way to keep that relationship working, is that there must be a disconnect so that the fire can be there to pull them together again. In what's it called again, sibling, a fiery passionate love is a misplaced love. It's an unhealthy love. It's not good. It's an inappropriate love. So we find these two elements. This is a love of water. This is a love of fire. The difference between, and water, the nature of water is to connect things. When you put water on flour, let's say, it becomes dough. You put water in earth, it becomes mud. Connects things together. So what he's saying is like this. In our relationship with God, there is these two elements of love. One element of love is by when we meditate on how different we are from him, how infinite he is and we're finite, how true he is and how not so true we are, how eternal he is and we are mortal, and so on and so forth. So all the differences of understanding how there is this great distance and remove and disconnect from us, from Hashem, that's what creates the fire. That's what creates the burning in the neshama to pass that gap, to be able to connect to someone that is essentially infinitely beyond our grasp. That's the burning fire within the neshama. And there's another kind of an attachment to Hashem. When the neshama finally does achieve connection, as long as the neshama is disconnected, it yearns and it burns. When the neshama has a moment when God reveals itself to the neshama, which would be something like a prophet experiencing prophecy, the moment of prophecy, they're in a state of deep ecstasy, bliss, and delight. There is no burning at that moment. There is just, it's just a moment of attachment. It's a moment of deep joy, satisfaction, and happiness. It's what the neshama is also experiencing in Gan Eden. Because in Gan Eden, Hashem reveals itself to the soul, or it says in Olam Haba, Tzadikim Yoshvim, Tzadikim Sit, V'nehenin, and they find pleasure and delight, Miziv HaShchina, from the radiance of the Shechina. That's the pleasure and the delight. What kind of pleasure? He explains, it's the pleasure of the mind, really. Because the pleasure that the soul has in God is that the soul experiences, it can comprehend something of God's greatness. When it finally comprehends, it experiences such delight and pleasure that calms the fire. There is no fire, there's just attachment. And so really, the interesting thing is, besides for it being a different nature of love, a love of water, love of fire, it's also experienced in a different place in the person. The love of fire, yearning, is restless, intense, and that's why it's something that takes place in the heart. Because the heart is where is blood. Blood is cooking. It's restless. It's bubbling. It's an emotion. The love of water is a love that is primarily experienced in the brain. Because the brain is calm, cool. That's why the brain is the element of water in the soul. And the heart is the element of that's why the warmth, the person's physical warmth is around the heart. It's warmer than the head. The head is more of a cool, moist place. The heart is dry and hot. So that's why the love of fire is related to the heart. The love of delight is related to the brain. Also in the heart, we're dealing with an emotion, but it's emotion that's tempered with calmness, the calmness of the unity, of the oneness, which takes place in the mind. That's called the water of the godly soul. So he says like this, in order for the person to achieve such a thorough connection to God, that not only is his love to Hashem coming from his godly soul, but that he should be able to transform the animal consciousness, the animal soul itself, and turn that into a holy to love for Hashem. The love, the person has to graduate from love of thirst to love of pleasure. It's only the experience of pleasure in Hashem that enables the human being to become transformed completely, that even the animal soul will start enjoying godliness. Why is that? Let's understand that. Why is that? Meaning, love, when a person has a burning passion and a yearning, just a very, very fiery desire for God, that love can consume them completely, but it will not transform. There will always be the animal consciousness will always remain in an unholy state. It will try to enter the body, the person can push it out, but it will always be a force. It won't be transformed. In order to cause a total metamorphosis, that the animal soul itself becomes an ally, it joins the godly soul, it requires that the godly soul should be able to share with the animal soul a love of pleasure, not just a love of burning, not just a love of desire. Why is that? So he explains it in two points, which are really related one to each other. And that is as follows. The animal soul, if we really dig deep into the animal soul and try to get into our animal consciousness and figure out what is at the root of who we are as earthly beings. The root of the animal soul is that it is a Baal Hanah. It's a creature that loves pleasure. That's what it is at its essence. It likes to be pleasured. That's its essence. That's what's called the water element of the godly, of the animal soul. We learned in the beginning in the first chapter in Tanya, that there's four elements in the animal soul: water, fire, wind, and earth. Water is the root of pleasure. And over here in this parak, he's implying that the water element is the deepest element in the animal soul. That its very nucleus of its existence is, I want delight. I want to be pleasured. That's what it is. Now, of course, it also has passions. It has wants. It has all kinds of things. But these are all outer, because it's so into pleasure, so that will create fire. Because if there is a distance between the thing that will give it pleasure and the pleasure, it has a passion to get to that. But underlying the passion and the fire, the inner thing is the pleasure. That's why it wants it. That's why it has anger. Because if anybody gets in its way, or anybody is standing in the way of it getting what it wants, its pleasure and so forth, it will kill. It goes for, that the anger comes from it. That's where depression comes from. Because depression is when I'm not being fulfilled, and I feel that life is not fulfilling to me, that will result in depression. All the elements of it evolve this essential core pleasure element of it. Therefore, if the godly soul is able to present a contrary pleasure to the animal soul, not a contrary, if the godly soul is able to share an experience of pleasure, an ecstasy and a bliss, a delight, a immeasurable pleasure, which is the pleasure for someone who has experienced the divine, if the godly soul can have a moment of that pleasure will drink up the water of the animal soul. Since the animal soul is so into pleasure, if the animal soul would have one time in its existence the pleasure of God, it will throw away every pleasure in the world for that pleasure. Because since God is the source of all delight and all pleasure, there is no competition. There is no way any pleasure can match up with him. The pleasures that we have in this world are all tiny, 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 tiny crumbs of pleasure that have fallen down from God in the process called Shvirat HaKelim. So so as long as the animal soul doesn't know of any other pleasure and it finds pleasure in Gashmias, it thinks that this is the only thing that gives it pleasure, so that creates all its narcissism and all its craziness about the physical, about pleasure, because it hasn't tasted real pleasure. But if the godly soul can share a moment of true, real pleasure with the animal soul, then the animal soul will be converted, will become an ally to the godly soul. However, if the godly soul is not in that level to experience divine pleasure, instead, it's still outside. It's still imagining the greatness of God, yearning for godliness. When it tries to share that with the animal soul and say, let's yearn together for that, the animal soul has no idea what you're talking about. Because it doesn't relate to the spiritual. It relates to pleasure. What gives me pleasure? This is immediate. This is here. Don't tell me that will be pleasurable. That's nice. I've never tasted that. I don't know what that is. So it can't join the godly soul. At best, the godly soul can shut it out, can fill the person with so much yearning for God that there's no space for the other desires to enter into the person's consciousness, into their mind. But you can't convert it. To convert it, Hashem has to become the pleasure of your life, not just the love and the passion of your life. Now, only tzaddikim merit to be able to experience pleasure in God in this world. Really, as we said earlier, this belongs to Olam Haba. Oh, it says like this. In our world today, our experience of God is, our love of Hashem is a love of yearning, a love of desire. That's why it says that in terms of our marriage with Hashem, the period that we have now, till the days of Mashiach, it's just like the Kedushin. There hasn't been the Nisuyin. The marriage, the complete consummation of the marriage hasn't taken place yet. So there is a distance. Even when we do Torah and mitzvahs and we're forging a connection to God, it's still not, it's not complete in that we should feel that burning, that in. So the best, we can desire Him and want Him, but not yet merge to oneness. When Mashiach comes, it's going to be that oneness. However, it says there are people that Hashem gave them a little bit of Olam Haba in their life. It says the Avos, for instance, Hashem gave them a taste of the future world in their life. So they experienced Ahava B'Tanugim, love of delight. And other tzaddikim are on that level, that they experienced this delight. And when they experience this delight, this causes the complete conversion of their animal soul. For most of us, that's wishful thinking. It's something we should aspire to, he says, because we never know if Hashem has granted us the soul of a tzaddik. If we don't try to figure it out, we might never know that Hashem has planted in us a very high neshama we're going to learn. But not everybody is meant to achieve this. So, but this is something which is possible. It's possible within the human experience for someone to reach this level, where his love of Hashem becomes a love of delight, and thereby total transform his animal soul. Okay. So that's what we learned till now. I know it was a little bit of a review, but it was important to solidify this all. Okay. Now, let's continue inside and we'll finish the perek. You know what, I'm gonna go back a few lines. So we'll see what we learned now is... In the page before this, on page 38, just quickly, we're going to learn it. What the godly soul desires, page 38, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6 lines from the bottom. The Hainu it wants, Sheyale, it should arrive, the Yavain it should come, the Yagian it should arrive, the Madrega Sahava Rabba, to the level of great love. That love that we're talking about now, love of delight. The Chiba Yesera, an added affection. Mi Madrega Sahava Azu Kirish Be'esh, a love that is higher and stronger than the level of intense love like flaming coals. A level that's beyond that. This is what's called in the verse Ahave Betanugim, love of delight. Lihis anega Hashem, to delight in God, me'ein olam haba, which is a somewhat, a little bit, even by tzaddikim, it's not olam haba. It's a little bit, a little foretaste of the world to come. Va'oineg, now he says. Now we need to understand why is this what is necessary to convert the animal soul? So he's going to explain that this experience is the experience of water, the water of the godly soul. And in order to counter the essence of the animal soul, which, as we said earlier, it's what's at the core of the animal soul? The animal soul's negative waters, its sense of pleasure that it has in the material and physical pleasures. So in order to convert water, you need to get to the only the water of the nefesh elokis, of the godly soul, can change and transform the water of the animal soul. So he's going to explain now how this experience is an experience that is in the mind. Since it's in the mind, it's the mind, as we said earlier, is moist and cool and watery. That is why this is necessary to convert the water of the animal soul. V'oineg, and this pleasure, hu b'maya chachma v'seichel. This experience takes place in the brain of chachma, in the brain itself. Really, it's on the right side of the brain, which is the brain where we conceive new ideas, the creative part of the brain. In the brain itself, it says the left side of the brain is warm and dry. The right side of the brain, where chachma takes place, is moist. So that's where pleasure takes place. That is why interesting, when a person has the first epiphany of an idea, you're filled with pleasure. It's that first moment. When you later are continue to develop an idea till you fully understand it, when you fully understand it, you have joy, but not so much pleasure. You have experienced that? Especially if you're a creative person, it's the first moment that an idea flashes in your mind, suddenly it's like, you're filled, you can see a person smiling, and you look at them, you see that their face is filled with this deep sensation. Even though there's a certain pain over there that I don't really get it yet. You can't explain it because the bina hasn't taken place yet. Bina is where you begin to dissect the idea. You move it from the right side of the brain to the left side of the brain to expand and so forth. That's more the concept of the fire element of the brain, the bina. And bina is more related to simcha, to joy. But pleasure is on the right side of the brain. So here too, Hashem can't really be grasped in the bina, because Hashem is not graspable. But chachma is the ability to see a truth that's bigger than you, and to touch it even if you don't grasp it. That's why the chachma is the place where the neshama can contact God himself and experience this immense pleasure that is olam haba. That's the water of the godly soul. That water has the ability to change the water in the animal soul. And the intellect, hamis anig, that delights bahaskalas Hashem in the comprehension of godliness, the yediyasai and his knowledge, kefiya saga sichlo, in accordance to how much the mind can grasp, the chachmasai and his wisdom. And this is the water, the zera oir zarua, and the planting of light, shebekedushas nefesh alikis, that is in the holiness of the godly soul. God planted light. And remember, we spoke last week that light and water is the same thing. Because originally, they're both coming from chesed. And every hashpah of chesed, it says in Kabbalah, has three dimensions to it. It begins as light. When it's very, very ethereal, when it's very, very abstract, it begins as light. Then when it gets a little more coarsened or thicker, it becomes water. And when it finally reaches the state of bina, it becomes a firmament, rakia. It's a Kabbalah, a Kabbalistic concept that's called oir mayim rakia, three dimensions. So the same is also when God planted this ability to delight in God, in the neshama, is a light that Hashem has, a seed of light that Hashem has put in every neshama, it giving it the capacity for it to be able to experience the divine. He says, that's the light. Or zarua la tzaddik. Hashem planted in every tzaddik, which is every neshama, or zarua, a planting of light. That's the water, which later translates into the water of a godly soul. When we can tap into that water, then the animal soul gets converted. Ha mahapeches letoiv. That water has the ability to transform to good. The water of the animal soul, which from them stem the lusts of the pleasures of this world. It's the water in the animal soul that create those lusts. Mitchila, from the beginning. Like it's stated in Eitz Chaim from the Arizal, Shar Nun Peregimel, Portal 50, Chapter 3, B'shem HaZohar. He says over there in the Zohar something, Shahara nehepach liyas toiv gomor. That is an amazing thing. Now, when it says you should love God with both your hearts, and the sages say with both of your inclinations, love Hashem with your Yetzer Tov and love Hashem with your Yetzer Hara. So the Zohar says this means literally that a person has the ability to convert his animal soul, his animal consciousness, with all of his earthy cravings and desires, for it to become a desire for holiness, for it to become a holy being. How? How can the Yetzer Hara, which is, or our animal soul, which is so essentially attached to Gashmiyot, to physicality, how does it become good? So, kemo Yetzer Tov, the Yetzer Hara can become an inclination to good, like the good inclination. Mamish, and he says literally the same. In order to accomplish that, you need to do one thing. Bahasir habegodim hatsayim mimenu. We need to remove or to strip the filthy garments from the animal soul. When a person peels the unholy garments off the animal soul, and you break it down to its core element, then, once that's accomplished, you can take the animal soul itself and convert it to good. Shehem atzoyim, what are the filthy garments that it has? Shehem tanuge olam hazeh, which are the pleasures of this world, shehu melubish b'hem, that it is enclosed in them. He's saying over here a phenomenal idea, which he's bringing from the Zohar. Because one can ask, the animal is an animal. The animal only knows of Gashmiyot. How is it possible for this to become a drive towards spirituality and to godliness? So he explains like this. The animal soul's attachment to the physical is not essential. The animal soul's attachment to the physical is a secondary state in it. It's not its essence. It's a garment. It's not who it is at its core. And it's something like this. If we are to dissect the animal soul to the very, very core essence, we said earlier, it's a pleasure seeker. It's looking for being happy. But as we said earlier, what is that pleasure? It hasn't been programmed in the very DNA of it what its pleasure is. In other words, it's not a must that the pleasure should come from the physical and from the material. It wants delight. It wants pleasure. Now, naturally, when it's born into this world and what is presented to it, as soon as the baby just opens its eyes, it immediately begins to receive physical pleasure. It enjoys its mother's milk, the comforts of the mother, and so forth, and then it starts growing. You keep on pampering the baby, and what you're supposed to do, no one should study this and say, oh, my kid is going to be a holy being, so we're just going to introduce spirituality. You have to take care of your baby and give the kid all of its needs and so forth. But as that happens, it begins to identify physical delights and pleasure with pleasure. That's pleasure. And that's what it gets to know. Now, spiritual abstract pleasures, it doesn't have yet the kelim, the vessels, to understand that and to appreciate that. So by the time the child reaches maturity of 13, by a girl 12, and by a boy 13, 14, a teenager, it has been so indulged in the physical and so forth that it begins to think or to feel that it's almost that it has an essential attachment to physical delights and pleasure. But that's not the essence. The essence of it, it says, pleasure me. Now, what a person could do through intense exercise of the mind and a lot of work, and we said earlier, especially through the development of their godly soul and the implementation of their godly soul, they can educate the animal soul that there is another pleasure, and there's a pleasure that's far superior. However, in order for the animal soul to react to that, in order for it even to pay attention to what the godly soul is presenting to it, you have to do something first. You have to strip the pleasures of the animal soul away from it. Because as long as it's getting its satisfaction and its pleasure from Gashmiut, from the physical, it's not open for anything else because it's too busy with its pleasures. That's why he says you have to first remove the garment. Removing the garment means the way it defines pleasure, that's the garment. The essence of the animal soul isn't bad. It wants what is going to be good for it. Now, it could learn to understand and appreciate that spirituality, holiness, and connection to Hashem is what's truly good to it. But for that, it will need serious education. That's what he means to remove the garment. To remove the garment is you have to peel away by not giving it what it wants. That's the idea. So you have to begin by despoiling it when the animal soul gets a lesson that when it wants something, it's not going to get it. And the more you separate it from the physical, from the pleasures of the physical, we're not talking about fasting here, we're not talking about mortification. We're talking about not giving in to the demands and the pleasure of what the animal desires. The more one desensitizes themselves from these pleasures, now you become open for an introduction of spiritual pleasures and so forth. And when that is accomplished, when all these filthy garments get removed from the animal soul, it needs to gravitate to something. And since it's not available anymore, the physical, because that has been removed, it will automatically convert and turn towards real pleasure, which is the pleasure of the divine. And that's what he's bringing from the Zohar. By removing the... By the way, it says this whole concept is the concept of taking the Parah Aduma and burning it down to the ashes. The red heifer is the animal soul. It's red. It's an animal. It's an animal. It's red. It's boiling with physical, with its pleasures and desires. What do we do with the red heifer that we learned last week? We burn it to its ashes. What is the ashes? The ashes is its essence. After you get rid of all the definitions, we get it down to what is it? What is it at its core? It's ashes. Those ashes you can take and make it holy. But you have to burn. That's what the Tanya explains in Parshas Chukas. The whole process of burning the Parah Aduma is the conversion of the animal soul to its core. The core essence of the animal soul could become holy. But in order to do that, you have to remove the outer layers of it. A tzaddik accomplishes that. Okay, so let's quickly finish. As it becomes, yeah. Shehem tanuga erlam azeh, shuhu melubush ben. Now, up till now we spoke. Now he goes back to what we said earlier. The godly soul wants to fill the brain with holy intelligence and wants to fill the heart with holy emotions. He only mentioned, however, two emotions, love and fear. Now he says it's not only love and fear, but the entire emotional spectrum of the human being. The godly soul wants also to express all the emotions of the heart, which are shehein anfei ayira v'ahava, that they are offshoots and branches from the love and fear. Meaning, the teferes is a combination of love and fear, compassion. That should also be, that should only be holy compassion. The netzach, which is victory, perseverance, that the perseverance in the heart should be perseverance towards holiness, fighting for holy things. Submission, hod, should also only be to holiness. So for all the seven midos should be only the midos of the godly soul. They should be only exclusively dedicated to God. Now the final stage that the godly soul wants, once it conquers the inner human being, which is the intellect and the emotions, in naturally what is going to happen next? What happens next? The behavior of the person is going to be a holy behavior. Because if all the intelligence and all the emotions are spiritual and holy and of the godly soul, then all thoughts and all speech and all actions are going to follow. Because they're just expressions of the emotions, expressions of the inner, of the intellect. So he says now, V'chol kayach hadibur, and the entire power of speech, shebepeh, that is in the mouth, v'hamachshava shebemoach, and the thought that is in the brain, yeh mumulayim, should be filled min levushei hamachshava v'hadibur shel nefesh elokis, from the garments of thought and speech of the godly soul. We said earlier, thought and speech is called a garment. So what should be filled in one's thoughts? Only the thoughts of the neshama, only the speech that is generated by the neshama, levada. Shehin machsheves Hashem, which is thinking about Hashem, v'toyraso, and thinking about Hashem's Torah. Li'oy sichasai kol hayoyim, that a person's speech all day long, lo'y pasik pumei migirsa, that one's mouth should not stop studying Torah. That should be all speech that is flowing from the person's mouth. Like a tzaddik, who's all of his communication, all his words, are speaking words of Torah. The koyach ha-maisi shebiyadav, and the power of action that is in a person's hands, v'shari machevara, and the other 200, and the rest of the 248 limbs, should be only in the deeds of mitzvahs. That means all the limbs should be doing mitzvahs. Which is the third garment of the godly soul, which is to do mitzvahs. That's what the godly soul wants. So it wants to fully manifest itself. It wants that it should be the eye of the human being. Who are you? What is the human being? Who are you? Only my neshama. That's who I am. And that's why everything that follows in the body, from intellect to emotion, even pleasure and desire, intellect, emotion, down to thought, speech, and action, should be one continuous, perpetual expression of the higher human being, a being that is devoted completely and thoroughly to the service of his creator, his or her creator. Now, he says, the problem is that there is another just as equally super ambitious being, which is the animal soul, that very, very much wants full compliance of the body, and it wants to be the identity of the human being. Ach nefesh Bahamas, he says, the animal soul, shema haklipa, that stems from the klipa, ritzayna, what is her desire? Lehepach mamish, the exact opposite. Doesn't even have to say what the animal soul wants. Doesn't have to describe it. Whatever the godly soul wants, she wants the exact opposite, which means she wants pleasures of the world, she wants to enjoy, she wants to be completely free from serving God. I don't want anything to do with that. I want to live my life. So this whole idea of my space, my life, the iPod, the I this, the I that, which is so, the world is so much into, about everything being the I, that's the philosophy of the animal soul. It's all about me and about my enjoyment and what. And that's what it wants. And it feels extremely threatened by the godly consciousness, because the very introduction of that higher being means the diminishment of the animal soul. So it will fight ferociously not to allow a person to meditate, to take the time to bring that higher consciousness in, because the very introduction of that is very, very threatening to the animal soul. So what does it want? However, he says something very comforting over here. He says, Letova sa'adam. What the animal soul desires, to completely consume the body, that the body should be a vehicle to express what she wants, and that is just physical material pleasure, selfish instincts and drives. This is ultimately, the reason why she desires it is because she wants it for man's benefit. Because she's here only to present a challenge to the godly soul so that life can be meaningful. If we wouldn't have any animal soul, and we would only have a godly consciousness flowing, and that would be natural to the human being, then we would be robotically holy. Then everything would just be natural, and we would be like angels. There would be no point to life. The point of the human life is that Hashem is delighting and getting pleasure from our struggle, and how we overcome our selfishness and do what he wants. So the animal soul wants to present a challenge so that we can overcome it. Letovas Adam, for the benefit of man. Sheyizgaber alel. What the animal soul is seeking is that man should prevail over it. V'yanatzchena, and should defeat it. K'mashal hazayna shebezorah kodesh. Like the mashal of the prostitute in the Zohar. The Zohar says like this. Spoke about this last year, Parshas Chukas. The Zohar says a very interesting thing, that a king wanted to challenge his son, the prince. His son was a very great boy, and he was a very moral, decent, good human being, and he was destined to be the ruler. But the king wanted to see he wanted to strengthen him, that he should have a very deep and strong backbone of morality and holiness. Now, as long as he's living in the palace, living in a very refined and sheltered atmosphere, he'll never be able to build that muscle and that resistance. So that's why he calls a prostitute in order to tempt him. The king was the one who hired the prostitute, that she should tempt the son. Now she knows the prostitute, and she will do whatever she can to tempt this boy. However, she knows what the king really wants. Now, she wants the son to resist her, because she's a subject of the king. She likes the king, and she's a subject, and she wants the child or the prince should have the strength and should of rejecting her. That's her true desire. However, she needs to do whatever she can, and she has to present herself as she's really, really interested in getting the boy to sin. But that's her deep, deep, deep behind it all is her desire that the child should not, that the prince should not give in, and so forth. So it says the same thing as the Satan. The Satan in its original origins, up there above, which is the root of our animal soul, is also a servant of God. It also is hired by Hashem. The whole realm of the Sitra Achra is created by God to serve as a challenge in human life, that we should be able to have an option, to have Bechira Chafshis, to choose what's right. The Jewish people are the prince, and Hashem wants to challenge us. So he gives us a Yetzahara. The Yetzahara is like this prostitute that has this job to tempt us. That's why. Now, it does say in the Maamar, also in Parshas Chukas last week, that interesting thing, that this is the animal soul in its, when it's still in a heavenly state, when it's up there in its original source, it really wants that we shouldn't listen to it. However, when the animal soul descends through many, many worlds and it comes down here into the physical world, she forgets her cause, what she's all about. And over here, she really is out to get for its own desire and pleasure. It's not that she is, because again, if the temptation would be, if the animal soul would not forget what she really desires, that she really wants the person not to listen, then she would not be able to serve. She wouldn't be able to present a strong antidote to the godly soul. It says like this, that the prostitute knows that since she doesn't want the child, the prince, to sin, she's not going to give it all she's got. So in order for her to do that, she needs to. She goes and she speaks to a friend of hers. And the time it gets down the chain, that last one doesn't know the intention. And if you don't know the intention, so her effort is to the fullest. And that is the same with the animal soul. When the animal soul gets down here, it is a perverted being. It desires pleasure and so forth for the sake of pleasure, not that we shouldn't listen. However, since, here's the interesting, this we're just going to conclude with this. Since the core root of the Nefesh HaBahamis and the animal soul, the prostitute inside our heart, is its desire that we should serve God and not listen to it, for that reason, it makes it easier for us to conquer it. Because really in her heart of hearts, the animal soul does not want us to listen to it. It wants the person to reject it. So what comes out from this is a very interesting thing. If we overcome our initial desires and wants for the pleasure, for the animal, and we do what Hashem wants, even though sometimes it causes a lot of pain, and it causes, I feel frustrated. But in the end, when we overcome our selfishness, we're happy. Who's happy? Our neshama is happy. Our godly soul is happy, and even our yetzahara is happy. So the human being has a true sense of happiness. If God forbid a person gives into his animal soul's demands and wants, we all see this. We walk away. We've done something we shouldn't have done. And our godly soul is aching and bleeding, and even our animal soul is disappointed. And that's why we feel so dissatisfied if we failed and we followed the animal soul's desires. So no one is happy. So by doing what the neshama wants, both souls are in the end happy. By doing what not saying completely, of course there are times when we do things what's right and it hurts us and we leave like, I had to give up and so on. But on a very deep inner, on a more subconscious level, on a very deep, deep place, there is satisfaction on both sides. The not doing what Hashem wants causes frustration in the human being on both elements, from his neshama definitely, and even from his animals. Okay. But Hashem, we continue next week, Sunday. Everybody should have a wonderful week. Any questions? I'll just...